Hello, everyone, and welcome to the weekly Influence Persuasion, Influence Negotiation, Self-Mastery Call. My name is Kurt Mortensen. Today is August 10th. We are live to teach you a tool of persuasion and influence. So we're going to take 15, 20 minutes and talk about some things that you can do to really increase your ability to influence, and we'll open up for questions about what we talked about today, and then, of course, things that you're running into that you need help with. The recording and contact us form and all that fun stuff is located at Y-Persuasion, WHYYPersuasion.com. A certain topic that you want to hear or a question you want to ask during the class, that is the best place to go. And, of course, we're pursuing to go to the GoToWebinar format in September. We will keep you posted on that. So hopefully everyone's having a great week this week. Let me know if the audio gets kind of fuzzy or weird, so I can't really tell on this end. What I want to talk about today is the illusion of resistance. Bottom line is you're sabotaging yourself. Do you create your own no? So the question is, do you create your own no? In your mind, do you think they're saying no? This is what you need to understand. Your mind might play tricks on you. Are they really saying no with their bodies or their questions? Are you assuming the worst? Are you sabotaging yourself? I've seen it too many times in a sales situation where the persuader or the salesperson will shake their head in the no facts, shake their head in the no fashion and say, "You wouldn't be interested, would you?" So we have a lot of challenges with that, to where it was the question, shaking of the head, the inflection of the voice, of course they won't be interested. We have to be careful what we see, and sometimes when we become naturally pessimistic, we think we're seeing things, but we're not really seeing things. They were interested, but you talked them out of it because you're creating that resistance for them. Sometimes we even call this self-negotiation. When I monitor negotiations, I see people, well, how about 10%? And there's silence. Oh, no, there's silence. Maybe that means they're not interested. Okay, about 9%. Oh, no, they're still silent. How about 8%? And you go all the way down to 5%. You're negotiating with yourself. You're sabotaging yourself because you think that silence is an illusion of resistance. They were ready to go at 10%, but they went to a good negotiation training, and they know that a lot of times silence with a rookie will cause them to negotiate with themselves. So let's get into this so you don't sabotage yourself. And you don't create your own resistance. You don't create the own no. They might be ready to go, but when you sabotage yourself, it really hurts your ability to influence. So let's talk about your imagination a little bit. Where does this imagination come from? Is it past experience? Yeah. Is it your attitude? Sure. Maybe it's part of your willpower, your personality type, how you were trained. But there's a few areas we can work on right now so you do not create that no. You do not have that illusion of resistance. First one we'll be talking about today is self-perception bias, how we see what we expect to see. We see what we want to see. We hear what we want to hear. We're going to talk about attention spans, both yours and the prospect's. We're going to get into nonverbal behavior because sometimes when they do something, and all of a sudden, like, oh, no, that means this. That might not be true. And we're going to go over expectations, your expectations, their expectations, because that's all part of your imagination and expecting to see what you think you're going to see. So let's go through these and talk about how these work. The first one is self-perception bias. Remember I said you see what you want to see. You see things different than the person you're talking to. We all see things in a different way. When 10 people see an accident, you'll have 10 different versions. It's just how our brain works. The brain will play tricks on you. If you go in there thinking, oh, they won't be interested, it's not going to happen, that's what you're going to see. I mean, countless studies have been done on self-perception bias. Your brain is not a hard drive to where every time you recall something, it's the same. It changes a little bit. For example, 92% of all managers will rate their managerial skills above average. 85% of high school seniors will rate their driving skills above average. 90% of people will rate their people skills above average because we have this self-perception bias. Go to a football game. As a neutral party, go to a football game, and you'll just be amazed. The one side will say, oh, great hit. The other side will say, cheap shot. And in their mind, that is what they saw. You tell patients that are recovering from surgery, oh, it's just going to take 2 weeks. You tell another one at 2 days, there's a big difference in recovery. You give somebody decaffeinated coffee and they say it's caffeinated, it has a lot of caffeine, they feel more energetic. You show somebody a horoscope, and if it says good things about them, they'll believe it. Now, the interesting thing there, if it says negative things, they won't believe it, but that's our perception bias. And that's what people see. So when you go in these situations, you have to be very careful of your self-perception bias and what's happening. Another example that's really interesting, as we talked about, you know, the football fans, they see what they want to see, the ability to recover from surgery, the decaffeinated coffee, and the horoscopes. But one of my favorite ones that we talk about self-perception bias is when you ask a female, a married couple, so you ask the wife, what percent of the housework do you do? The wives will say 90%. Then you go to the husbands and say, okay, what percent of the housework do you do? And the husbands will say 40%. Now, obviously, if you add that up, it's 130%, but that's their perception.
No.
So be very careful of that perception bias because it'll skew the way you see the situation. You have to go into an influence situation as neutral. You can't bring all this baggage, what's happened in the past, or your attitude, or what happened next week, or the phone call before, or the presentation before. You have to go in neutral. So that's self-perception bias. The next one is attention spans. Now, there's two types here. There's focused attention span and sustained attention spans. Now, I don't know if you've seen the movie Up. It was a Disney Pixar movie. They had talking dogs in this movie where they had a little collar and it translated what they were saying. I don't know if you remember the movie or not, but then a number of times throughout the movies, these dogs were talking. All of a sudden, they're like, squirrel, right in the middle of the conversation. They'd come back. They talk about squirrel. And that's my favorite part of the movie because that's what your prospect is. Oh, something happens, something moves, something rings, something dings. They are all over the place. Because when you look at attention span, when people are just there in a neutral situation, they say it's about 8 seconds that people can focus, and then something else happens. 8 seconds. Now, a sustained attention span, if you really try to focus, you really try to maintain your attention, you might get 20 minutes, and that's a high, and it's probably going to be around 13 minutes. So what does that mean? Well, just because they look at their watch doesn't mean a lot. You're like, oh, no, they look at their watch, or they looked at the screen, they looked outside the window, they looked down. No, they have short attention spans. They will be distracted. Squirrel, right? Squirrel. And you can't let that bother you. A lot of times you think, well, they're not listening, this is not happening, they're looking bored. What if they was low in the presentation, or they had a big lunch, or there was a high temperature in the room, or maybe you're vomiting on them all the features and benefit? You're losing them. It's you. So what you need to do, if you think you're losing somebody's attention, what you should do is ask a question, come in with a story. That'll help you bring them back. So just because you don't think they're listening, not a time to run away or speed up your presentation, that's a big challenge for a lot of people. Attention spans all time low, 8 seconds. And if they're really trying, it's not going to be much higher than that. Squirrel, remember that. Just remember that because that's what they're doing. Everything's going to distract them. That's how most people are. Now, as you go up the success ladder, the more successful people are, the more they can focus and concentrate. But that's a whole other lesson. Another one you have to be very careful of is nonverbal behavior. Now, the key here is just because, like I mentioned, they look at their watch, doesn't mean they're bored. They looked at their watch and they speed up their presentation. They don't try anymore. They're going through the motions. They're not interested. Maybe they just wanted to know the time. Or they glance at the computer because it dinged at them. Or they're playing with their cell phone. Or they looked out the window. Or their feet are on their desk. Oh, their feet are on the desk. I heard that means they're too comfortable. They're not interested. What if they didn't laugh at your joke? Well, maybe it wasn't funny. Maybe they're not the type of person that will laugh. Maybe they refuse to shake your hand. Oh, yeah, they don't like me. No, maybe they're a germaphobe. Well, they spit on me. Well, that'd probably be one that would tell you it's time to leave. We won't go into that one. Or their hands are behind their head. Oh, yeah, they're definitely not interested. The key here with nonverbal behavior is you're looking for clusters. Now, if all of these things happen, that would be a cluster of things. Now, you're probably time to leave. But if only one happens, it probably doesn't dictate that it's time to sabotage yourself. So with nonverbal behavior, you really have to learn to read people. Top persuaders really know how to read people. For example, when people are interested, you'll notice that they lean forward and their eyes sparkle and their head starts to nod. Their voice will sound a little more interested and the responses get a lot easier. That's important to know. So when you see three or four of these, you know they're interested. Now on the flip side, when people are rejecting you, you get really short answers, their eyes turn cold or they might be drifting, their arms will fold, their lips might tighten, their voice might sound flat, they might be standing back a little bit more. That's why it's so important to read people. My message here is just because they did one thing or looked at that watch or picked up the computer mouse or any of those things, big deal. Don't let that hurt your presentation. Don't let that create a no in your mind. Because if you think there's a no in your mind, then that changes your presentation, it changes your demeanor, it changes how you act, and it changes how you treat them. It all comes down to expectations, whether positive or negative. What are your expectations when you go into a situation? Oh, they're not going to buy, they won't be interested, they'll say no, they're the type of person that, and fill in the blank. Expectations influence reality. That's just how it is. Oh, what if they take advantage of me? And, you know, people dressed like that, they usually don't have any money. And I've talked to people like that before. And a big one, well, they're really successful. They're millionaires. And, wow, they might be really hard to persuade. Well, let me just tell you that millionaires are easier to persuade than the average person. The average person tends to resist you a lot more. Oh, what if they try to persuade me? And we all need to be persuaded here and there. Millionaires a lot of times will say, okay, persuade me. Well, I should say it. Sell me. Persuade me. Come on, give me the pros and cons. Come on, give me your best shot. And it's a whole different scenario, but sometimes we get so stuck in what's going on. The biggest factor here is that we tend to prejudge. The moment you prejudge who the decision maker is, the moment you prejudge that they may or may not be interested, it changes your presentation. I could tell you so many horror stories if somebody prejudged they wouldn't be interested. And you might be right half the time, but the other half the time, it sucks the life out of your presentation, you act differently, and of course you're not going to persuade them. Everybody you meet can do business with you or know somebody that can. Everybody you meet can teach you something. Don't prejudge. Watch your expectation. People are like, oh, they picked up the phone, they must not be interested. Oh, their answers are really short. They must not be interested. No, maybe they're in a hurry, maybe they're analytical, maybe that's their personality. Oh, they said I only have 10 minutes. That must mean they've already decided. Oh, no, the secretary interrupted. They must be the type of person that has their secretary interrupt after 5 minutes so they can get out of the presentation. Oh, they're not that sharp. Or, oh, every time they have that objection, I can't persuade them. That's all expectations. You have to be very careful. Expectations influence reality. Now, your expectations can be communicated through your gestures, your body movements, eye contact, the way you ask questions, the way you talk to them. I mean, those are our expectations. That's where they come from. Be very careful. There's countless studies that have been done on expectations and how they influence reality. We see it time and time again, especially in the school system. We all have stories about teachers who brought us up to the next level and teachers that pulled us down. One interesting study was done with students, elementary school students, and they all had that hard candy with wrappers to all the students. They unwrapped them, and most of them threw the wrappers on the floor. That's what elementary school kids do. They counted the wrappers. But over the coming weeks, what happened? The teacher would say, here's how you're managing expectations. You're the cleanest class I've ever had. Thanks for being so clean. And she'd mention something every day. Vice principal came in and said, hey, I heard you're the cleanest class in the whole school. Janitor writes on the board, thanks for being such a clean class. A couple weeks later, they hand out some hard candy again, and they counted them. Big difference as far as the number that went to the trash can. So it's not only your expectations, but their expectations, and you need to manage those. Because the moment you prejudge them, you know, it'll suck the life out of your presentation. Other interesting studies we've seen, There was a study done by Professor Rosenthal. He was a professor at Harvard. And he told his students that he had developed a breed of rats that could run mazes very quickly. And he told the other half of the students that they would get normal rats. So half the students would get the very fast rats, the smart rats, and the other half would get the not-so-smart rats or the normal rats, and they would have them go through these mazes. Now, what the students did not know is that they were the same rats. But for some reason, the smart, fast rats got better times, even though they were the same rats. We know that wiping your feet on a doormat increases the expectations of you going to a home, increases the chances. If you hand somebody a pen with a contract or an agreement, it increases the chances that you're going to do that. That's all part of expectations. There's even first impression expectations. Have you ever noticed how people you assume are going to be jerks turn out to be that way? And if there's someone that you're excited to meet, you treat them differently? See, often our assumptions and expectations about someone we're about to meet for the first time play out exactly as we've already mentally conceived them. So once again, even when they're first meeting with someone, you're sending out these subconscious subconscious messages about how they should respond and behave to you. Another one was really interesting, an experiment. Actually, this was an accident. It was a coupon they sent out, and there was a printing error on this coupon that actually made it more expensive. It was for a tire coupon. So when you used the coupon, it actually made it more expensive. So there was a mistake. That's not what they wanted. But they had been doing this coupon for years. Now, all of a sudden, there was a mistake. It would cost people more. They had the same response rate because the expectation is you get a coupon, you save money. So really take a look at your expectations and what is happening during your presentations. Do not sabotage yourself. Do not negotiate with yourself. Do not put the no in their mind. Just because you see one or two of these things doesn't mean they're not interested. That's why I want you to work on this week, something very important, is I want you to assume the best. Now, I know there's good side of assumption and bad side of assumption, but here, assume the best. Assume they're going to be interested, and they want to know more, and they're going to answer your questions, and they're going to be interested. That changes your demeanor and how you act. And look for clusters. Just because they look at their watch or look at their email or the secretary interrupts or something strange happens or they just keep looking out the window does not mean they're not interested. But if they're doing all of those, well, now you've seen a cluster, and it might be time to ask a question to gauge their interest and move on. And manage your expectations. As we look at top persuaders, they tend to be more, no, put it this way. When we look at top persuaders, they are more optimistic. They see a brighter picture. Optimists live longer. They make more money. They have more friends versus pessimists. And I know it's easy to be pessimistic at times, but if you go into a presentation, pessimistic, talk to someone over the phone, pessimistic, that goes through the phone, that goes through your presentation, that triggers subconscious triggers, and that creates the no many times. That causes them to resist, and a lot of times you're creating that resistance for them. You're giving it to them, and that is not what we want in the world of influence and persuasion. So this time, what I want you to do is assume the best, be optimistic, manage your expectations, and go throughout the presentation, look for those clusters, and if you see four or five, then it's time to gauge their interest and either stick around or move on. That way it'll save you time, but that way you're not creating the no. Master this, and you'll see a big difference in your ability to read people and influence with power. Any questions about what we talked about? Any things that you're running into this week? Let me just say this.
On being positive.
Go ahead.
How do you be positive without coming on to the other person as being aggressive to them? And that's just a way of your tone of voice, or
I'm not talking about being so enthusiastic that you're bouncing all over the place, that you're repelling them like a newborn puppy dog. But the people you're persuading do expect you to be more optimistic than the average person. They do like to see that, and it is contagious. So we know successful people, they're cautiously optimistic. They're still looking around the corners. They're preparing for other things, but for the most part, they know things are going to work out. We're not talking about being blind and not seeing things, but if you can go into a presentation and mirror their energy and be optimistic that you're there to solve their problem, because as persuaders, you're problem solvers, that you know that you can do that, then that opens the door for you to be able to persuade them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then if this is an area that you know you have a big challenge with, one of the audios I'll recommend is in the Magnetic Persuasion series. It's called The Law of Expectations. It's one of the 12 Laws of Persuasion. That go into more detail about what we talked about today. Of course, the recording will be posted on whypersuasion.com. The key factor here is people just automatically go to the negative so fast. Oh, they looked at their watch. They did this, or they won't be interested. They're doing to where you create your own no. It's an illusion of resistance. They were interested all along, but because of your demeanor or you prejudged them, now, of course, they're not going to be interested, and that really, really holds them back. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one. I've been making phone calls this week and leaving a lot of messages. Are there certain words or phrases that will get someone to listen to the message?
Well, they're listening to the message, or at least the first part of it. How long are your messages usually? First of all, have they talked to you before? Do they know who you are?
No, they don't. But they've gotten an email from me. And they've asked for information.
These are cold leads.
Okay.
Edge media.
Here's what we know about leaving messages.
Okay.
Now, you could leave your message in your... I could wake you up at 3 a.m. in the morning and you could leave your message because you've done it so many times. And that's how it sounds. Like you've done it
right.
So many times. So you need to realize it's the first time they're hearing your voice. You need to be very careful what you're leaving on that machine, number one. Number two, maybe you need to adjust your message. If it's the type of person that says, it's Bob, you know what to do, probably analytical person, you need to get to the point pretty fast. If it's Mary and there's music playing, they said, oh, your call is important to me, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible, they're probably more of an amiable person. You probably want to lighten it up a little bit. That's important. Those are two very important things. The key factor with leaving a message is why would they call you back? You have to give them a reason to call you back. Is it something of value? Is it an answer to their problem? There's something called the Zeigarnik effect where we tend to remember things more that are unfinished. And so if you could say, hey, I found these three things. I want to get them over to you. Give me a call. Statistically, they're going to remember more because they're either not calling you back because they're not interested or they forgot. And so we really need to look at why they would be interested and give them some reasons not to forget. So if you have something of value that you can give them that they need to call you for or report that's going to answer their questions or whatever it is, you have to look, okay, and get into their brain. Why did they respond to this, to the marketing piece? You're calling them cold. They responded to an email. And remember, too, that they responded to this email, what was it, 3 days ago, 5 days ago? And maybe that pain at that moment's not the same as it is now. Maybe the emotion at the moment's not the same as it now. And so you have to kind of build a voicemail around that emotion. You know, why did they click on that ad? That is their problem. You're going to solve it. This is why they need to call you, because you're going to give them this, this, and this. And make sure that it doesn't sound like you've left the message 1,000 times.
Thank you.
You bet. Any other questions out there?
I think I have one.
Check.
We're involved in some church changes and so forth, and there seems to be quite a lot of diversity in how to solve some of the problems. And we have one military background gentleman that is so quick to put you on the defensive with some kind of shotgun statements and things like that. Is there a good way to turn that around?
Well, military, you know, people And as we put ourselves in their shoes, they tend to be more aggressive in your face. It's my way or the highway, because that's kind of their hierarchy.
Right.
They're very authoritarian, and they'll like to push people's buttons, especially if they feel that if they're the authority, act like the authority, that people will just listen.
Uh-huh.
And the main factor there is you can't show that it's getting to you. You can't let it get you angry, because that's what that type of person is looking for, because when you get angry, they've won. And a lot of times you just have to hear them through. There's a couple things you can do. Even when you know you're not going to accept the answer, you say, well, let's hear it and go through it, look at the pros and cons and talk about it, so you can let them talk and let the steam out a little bit too. And then sometimes you can give them something to argue about. Even if it's a minor point that you don't care about, some personalities just like to argue. Some like they just like to stir the pot. They like to be aggressive. They like to be the one that ruffles feathers. And that's who they are. That's their personality. Even though most people don't like that, that's who they are. That's what they're going to do. But make sure you hear them out, even though you're not going to accept their idea. And that's even true with teenagers. If you just say, no, you can't do it, versus, well, tell me about that. Okay, let's look at the pros and cons. And, well, that date's not available on our calendar, and let them down slowly. A lot of times it has a much different effect. But the main thing with that personality is do not let it get to you, or let them show that it's getting to you, because it will just increase that behavior.
Or create a diversion from the main topic that you really want to go back and talk about.
Yeah, it can be a diversion, or it can be something, give them something to argue about. Well, do we want to have chicken or steak? Well, let them argue about it. Who cares, right? Let them argue about that. Let them get it out of their system and go on to what's important.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. So, again, this week I want you to assume the best. Don't sabotage yourself. Do not negotiate with yourself. Get in there, and as you're talking to people, again, it comes across in your demeanor. You would be surprised, as I talked about how many people, you wouldn't be interested, would you? How often do we see that as they shake their head? Of course they're not going to be interested now. They were before. So be careful that, hey, if you're just in your expectations, they're going to do it. They're going to be interested. It just changes how you act and how many people will be interested, and it'll make a big difference in what you're able to do. All right. So whypersuasion.com has the replay line and the contact us form. Wish everyone massive success. Everyone have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Good night, everyone.